This is Jim Inkster coming today on Thanksgiving. We're glad you're with us, first of all, and pleased you're spending your holiday with us. We will hear from Michael Kurtz, the distinguished professor of American history at Southeastern Louisiana University. He's known for his research into the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. It was 49 years ago today that the 35th American president was killed at Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas. And much mystery remains about who did it, whether Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone or acted at all. Michael Kurtz believes there was a massive conspiracy to take the life of JFK. That's our main topic today, and we'll be back after this pause for the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. The ceasefire between Israel and Hamas is holding. It's been less than 24 hours since the truce took effect, having been brokered by the U.S. and Egypt. Linda Granstein in Jerusalem reports 8 days of fighting killed more than 150 Palestinians and at least 6 Israelis.
Sirens sounded in southern Israel, sparking fears that Hamas or other factions in Gaza were violating the hours-old ceasefire. Israeli officials said the sirens were apparently a false alarm. Israel began releasing more than 50,000 army reservists who had been called up over the past 8 days of fighting. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel had destroyed thousands of rockets aimed at the Jewish state, and Israel wanted an extended truce. Both sides agreed to halt all hostilities, and Israel pledged to ease restrictions on Gaza. For NPR News, I'm Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
The Taliban are claiming responsibility for a deadly bombing today in Pakistan. Nearly 24 people were killed near Islamabad when a suicide bomber struck a Shiite Muslim procession. Dozens more were wounded. Some of those killed were children. The explosion went off in Rawalpindi as police tried to stop the bomber, who was on foot. With Europe's economy struggling, the heads of EU nations are meeting today in Belgium. Terry Schultz in Brussels reports they're trying to agree on a 7-year budget with an eye on its poorer members.
The only item on the summit agenda is the budget, spanning from 2014 to 2020. On one side, wealthier nations led by Britain reject any increase from the last budget of $1.3 trillion. On the other side, Poland and Spain lead a group insisting that more EU funding is needed to spur their economic growth. EU President Herman Van Rompuy has proposed a compromise that offers cuts. He's meeting each leader individually, trying to forge agreement before the summit starts. British Prime Minister David Cameron was first, saying any budget increase would be quite wrong.
We're going to be negotiating very hard for a good deal for Britain's taxpayers and for Europe's taxpayers.
The budget must be approved unanimously. It's considered possible they'll still be negotiating Saturday morning. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
Prosecutors are still deciding whether to charge a Florida teenager as an adult for the shooting death of a 13-year-old girl aboard their school bus. He remains at a juvenile detention center. Holiday travelers are finding it a little cheaper to fill up the gas tank. AAA says gasoline prices are down 44 cents a gallon from mid-September. The average price nationwide is $3.43 a gallon. AAA says more Americans are traveling at least 50 miles from home this Thanksgiving, but fewer are flying because of the economy. They're handing out Thanksgiving meals today to thousands of people in New York City still recovering from Hurricane Sandy. This is NPR News from Washington.
With 89.3 WRKF News, I'm Ashley Westerman. Texas brine officials intend to permanently plug one of its two vent wells near the Assumption Parish sinkhole after officials discovered earlier this week that hydrogen sulfide gas was escaping to the surface. The Advocate reports the company submitted its plan Wednesday to the State Department of Natural Resources. The leaking well was shut in Monday evening. Texas brine spokesman Sonny Cranch said the minimal amount of gas that escaped does not pose a public health risk. The salt cavern owned by Texas Brine inside the Napoleonville Salt Dome is thought to be the culprit of the sinkhole, which has released methane and crude oil. About 150 homes in the Bayou Corn and Grand Bayou areas have remained evacuated since the sinkhole was discovered in early August. Officials have been setting up vent wells to burn off the methane in an effort to get evacuees back into their homes. The National Fire Protection Association says today is the leading day for cooking fires in the home. According to the NFPA, three times as many home fires occur on Thanksgiving than any other day of the year. State Fire Marshal Butch Browning says while Thanksgiving is a fun festive holiday, it can also be hectic. He says it's a fire hazard to overuse cooking appliances.
If you have four burners on your stove, then there should only be four pots on your stove. You know, what we see in a lot of cases is the stove is being used to its maximum. There are appliances plugged in on the countertops nearby being used, so electricity is being used to its maximum.
Browning urges people to make sure there is a working smoke alarm in the home that will give enough notice to evacuate in case of a fire. This is WRKF News.
Support for NPR comes from the Cy Sims Foundation, supporter of the Cy Sims School of Business at Yeshiva University.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757 toll-free. You may reach us via email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Kevin Gallagher is producing, and today is Thanksgiving Day, and we are doing a show live. So if you'd like to talk with our guests today, we certainly welcome your input, and this should be a lively show. President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the 35th President of the United States, was assassinated at 12:32 Central Standard Time on Friday, November 22, 1963, 49 years ago, in Dealey Plaza at Dallas. Kennedy was fatally shot traveling with his wife, Jackie, the First Lady, Governor John Connally, and John Connally's wife, Nellie, in a presidential motorcade. An investigation by the Warren Commission that lasted almost a year concluded that JFK was assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald, native of New Orleans, acting alone, and that Jack Ruby acted alone when he killed Oswald 2 days later before Lee Harvey Oswald could stand trial. The commission's conclusions were initially supported by a majority of Americans, but polls conducted from 1966 to 2004 found that as many as 80% of Americans have suspected there was a plot or a cover-up. With us to talk about it is Michael Kurtz, a Southeastern Louisiana University professor emeritus of history who may be the foremost expert on the Kennedy assassination in this country. Now, we've had other people on this show with differing opinions, including Vincent Bugliosi, who believes that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, Dr. Kurtz, who in 1995 testified on the Kennedy assassination before the Assassination Records Review Board, says that there was a conspiracy in Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas, on this date in 1963. Good morning, Dr. Michael L. Kurtz.
Good morning, Jim. Good to be here.
Nice to talk with you, and we've talked with you through the years, and you were a graduate student at the University of Tennessee when President Kennedy was assassinated. I'm sure you remember that as though it were a day or two ago.
Oh, yes. That Kennedy assassination was like the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor and the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Nobody will ever forget what they were doing when they heard the news. You know, I've never met a person who can't remember. It's just one of those traumatic events in history that etch themselves forever in the mind.
The president was only 46 years old. He has now been dead longer than he was alive, but in those 46 years, he was a World War II hero, receiving the Silver Star for his actions. He won the Pulitzer Prize for Profiles in Courage, U.S. Senator, also United States President. He was a man who did a lot in 46 years.
Yes, he certainly was. He was very ambitious and succeeded in fulfilling his ambitions.
But to accomplish those ambitions, what is it from the Rhinestone Cowboy song? There's a lot of compromising on the road to my horizon. Kennedy made a few enemies, didn't he?
Oh, yes, he certainly did. Kennedy made enemies in many different areas of American life. For example, it's well documented that through his father, Joseph Kennedy's connections with the mafia, the provided a great deal of support for Kennedy in his political campaigns, especially the one for president. It provided him money because Joe Kennedy didn't want to spend money out of his own pocket. It would look too bad in the public, for the public, so he had his mafia friends donate a great deal of money for Kennedy's campaign, and the mob helped Kennedy get elected in critical places like Chicago. But when Kennedy became president, his brother, Attorney General Robert Kennedy, launched a crackdown on organized crime. And that, of course, provides one motive for the organized crime theory in the Kennedy assassination. He also made enemies in the among the segregationist, we would say racist, groups in the United States today because of his support for civil rights. And it was Kennedy who first proposed the Civil Rights Act before Congress, and even though it didn't get passed, nevertheless, he was he made a lot of enemies in doing so. There were more than a few people in some southern states who were not sorry to hear that Kennedy had been assassinated. And along the way in his political career, the Kennedys, of course, have always had a reputation for ruthlessness, and they had a number of political enemies that grew up. But that's true of practically any successful politician, of course.
So there were people who, as you state, were not unhappy that the president was killed, and it's hard to fathom, but there were places
yes.
where it was celebrated that he had been assassinated,
yes.
places in the United States. Where does Lee Harvey Oswald come into this, other than the fact that he was the man who was charged and ultimately killed 2 days later? In fact, he was sent to the same hospital that President Kennedy was, Parkland Hospital. And Lee Harvey Oswald had a life that was cloaked in mystery in his 24 years of life. How did he get at that place at that time?
Well, that's a good question. You know, just exactly how did Oswald fit into this whole story is something that has never been answered to this day, you know, satisfactorily. There are too, like you say, there are too many mysteries and riddles, enigmas associated with Oswald. We do know that he got his job at the Texas School Book Depository building through mere coincidence. A neighbor of his wife's knew about an opening, and his wife, who he was estranged with, Marina Oswald, mentioned it to him, and he applied for a job at the Book Depository building before it was known that the Kennedy motorcade would pass in front of the building. So that was mere coincidence. But Oswald's other connections along the way, and especially in the year 1963, after he moved from the Dallas-Fort Worth region to New Orleans and then made a mysterious trip to Mexico City, you know, remained the subject of a great deal of controversy. Just exactly who was he associating with? He was outwardly posing as a Marxist, Leninist sympathizer, but surreptitiously, he associated with nothing but people who were on the opposite end of the political spectrum, extreme right-wingers, people like David Ferry in the city of New Orleans.
So do you think he was involved at all, or was he part of a conspiracy?
I think that it's quite possible that Oswald was part of a conspiracy, a broader conspiracy to kill Kennedy. But I think he was a somewhat minor tool. And he may very well have been, as he told the press the night of the assassination, a patsy, set up to take the blame while the real assassins got away. He was the kind of person who would have possibly participated in the plot to kill the president. I don't think he had enough intelligence on his own or to plan the assassination. And there are all kinds of questions about just how he could have gotten that rifle into the building on the morning of the assassination and other things of that kind. But anyway, I think that he was a minor cog in a much larger machine.
So do you think he fired at all, Dr. Kurtz?
It's possible, Jim, that he could have fired a shot from a lower floor of the book depository building. I say a lower floor because, as you know, I'm sure he was seen by two eyewitnesses, the superintendent of the book depository building and the Dallas police officer, 90 seconds after the shooting took place in a second floor lunchroom standing in front of a Coke machine. And he was not out of breath, not agitated, not nervous or anything else. It would have been impossible for him to have gotten down there from the sixth floor southeast corner window in that short a period of time. And the possibility exists, of course, that he could have fired a shot. I have my doubts myself, but nevertheless, I would concede that possibility.
Well, as I noted at the start of our conversation, that in 2004, about 80% of Americans thought that there was some kind of a plot to kill the president of the United States on this date in 1963. But I think in the last decade, the momentum has moved somewhat in the other direction, and now there are those who believe that Oswald did it, and he acted alone, and that the Warren Commission had it right. This has been somewhat of an amazing turnaround. There have been some noted scholars, such as Mr. Bugliosi, who is one of a few who have written books stating that Oswald could have done it and probably did do it, and that there's not much doubt that he was the lone gunman. How do you fathom that, Dr. Kurtz?
Well, I think, first of all, time has passed a great deal. Interest in the assassination has waned over the years. There hasn't been any major revelation about anything regarding the assassination in almost 20 years since the Assassination Records Review Board closed down, and the documents that it released have been gone over. Also, people like Bugliosi, have done the kind of research that they do into the assassination. They've concluded that Oswald did it by himself. And I might mention, just last month, the famous Fox News commentator Bill O'Reilly came out with a book called Killing Kennedy, in which he concluded the same thing, that Oswald did it by himself. But I think the pendulum swings back and forth over the years. At first, as you said, the people believed the Warren Commission report, but then in the mid-1960s and later, because of the Garrison investigation and books critical of the Warren report, the pendulum swung the other way. Then with the trial of Clay Shaw and his acquittal, the pendulum again swung in favor of the lone assassin. And then later on, with the public release of the Zapruder film and other information, on the whole, I still think that the large majority of Americans believe that there was a conspiracy, though.
Michael Kurtz is our guest, the professor of history emeritus at Southeastern Louisiana University. He still is teaching a course on the Kennedy assassination. In fact, is doing so this semester on the Hammond campus. He is the author of Crime of the Century, 1993 book on the JFK assassination. And it was 49 years ago today that President Kennedy was killed in Dallas, Texas. And according to some, Michael Kurtz mentions Bill O'Reilly, and I noted Vincent Bugliosi. There was a guy named Gerald Posner who wrote a book called Case Closed. According to some, Lee Harvey Oswald, who at the time was 24 years old and 1 month and 4 days, from New Orleans, Louisiana, was the man who did it. Michael Kurtz says that's not the case. In fact, he thinks that there may have been a number of people firing weapons on this date 49 years ago in Dealey Plaza. We'll return with Dr. Michael Kurtz after this 1 minute pause.
You've heard the headlines. Now find out why they matter. Listen to the Diane Rehm Show for the stories behind the news. You'll hear lively, civil conversations with people in the know. The Diane Rehm Show, answers to questions you want asked. Join us weekdays.
Brought to you by Brian Harris, Porsche Audi.
Weekdays at 10 a.m. on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge.
Support for the Jim Inkster Show provided by Luba Workers' Comp. For over 20 years, Luba has provided workers' compensation coverage to businesses throughout Louisiana and now Arkansas and Mississippi. Luba.com. Luba Workers' Comp. Genuine dependability.
And by LSU Performing Arts Academy. Performing arts classes and private music lessons for children and adults. Classes for all levels year-round on the LSU campus. paa.lsu.edu/578-3230.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Happy Thanksgiving to you. 297-5633 if you'd like to join us. November 22nd, 1963, 49 years ago today, President Kennedy was killed in Dallas, Texas. And there has been speculation about what happened at 12:32 p.m. Central Time in Dallas on that day for almost a half century. Michael Kurtz, professor of history at Southeastern Louisiana University, is with us. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757 if you're calling outside the area. Now, Kevin, let's go to, first of all, Walter Cronkite's famous announcement of President Kennedy's death on this day in 1963.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
And there is, remarkably, a video account of what occurred on that day in Dallas. And mind you, think about the technology in 1963 when a Dallas dressmaker, Abraham Sapruder, showed up in Dealey Plaza, and he's running a camera that was primitive by today's standards. And in addition to that, he doesn't move. He stays with the shot, literally, the shots, as President Kennedy's head is blown off. And he was interviewed shortly thereafter. And this is, I think, Abraham Sapruder on the night of the assassination.
May I have your name, please, sir?
My name is Abraham Sapruder.
And would you tell us your story, please, sir?
I got out and about a half hour earlier and get into a good spot to shoot some pictures. And I found a spot, one of these concrete blocks that I have down near that park near the underpass. And I got on top there. There was another girl from my office. She was right behind me. And as I was shooting, as the president was coming down from Houston Street making his turn, it was about halfway down there, I had a shot. And he slumped to the side. Like this. Then I heard another shot or two. I couldn't say whether it was one or two. And I saw his head practically open up, all blood and everything. And I kept on shooting. That's about all. I'm just sick again.
I think that pretty well expresses the entire feelings of the whole world. You have the film in your camera. We'll try
to get... I brought it on the studio now.
We'll try to get that processed and have it as soon as possible. Right now, we have
in
video.
Fact.
All right. Now, Michael Kurtz, that film that Sapruder shot, that is an amazing artifact, and without it, I think this would have been a case closed a long time ago. But what do you see when you watch that film, as I'm sure you have over and over and over?
Oh, yes, Jim. The Zapruder film is, without question, the most analyzed piece of film in history. It's only 22 feet of film. But anyway, what I see is that, first of all, President Kennedy is shot for the first time at a point where the limousine disappears behind a street sign for 1 second. then, about a second and a half later, Governor Connally is struck. And then finally, on the film, you see the most vivid thing that everybody notices and remembers on the film is the tremendous explosion on the right front side of Kennedy's head and the violent backward and leftward movement of his head after he's been shot. And, of course, the film winds up with Jacqueline Kennedy crawling out onto the trunk of the limousine and Secret Service agent Clint Hill from the follow-up car running and jumping onto the trunk of the limousine.
Now, there is the school of thought that the Warren Commission has forwarded that one of those shots hit both the president and the governor. You don't believe that, do you?
No, I don't.
Why not?
The Warren Commission's fundamental thesis, of course, is that Oswald fired all the shots. And because of the Zapruder film and because of the type of rifle that Oswald is supposed to have used, a 6.5-millimeter bolt-action Mannlicher-Carcano rifle, he simply could not have gotten off two separate shots and struck Kennedy and Connally. It takes 2.25 seconds to get off two separate shots without aiming. The FBI ballistics people found out, but the Zapruder film clearly shows that there's a maximum of 1.5 seconds between the time Kennedy was shot the first time and Connally was struck. And so you have a dilemma here. You have either one bullet struck both men and Connally suffered a delayed reaction to his wounds, or one gunman struck Kennedy and the second gunman struck Connally. Of course, the second part of the second conclusion there, of course, would mean a conspiracy, and the Warren Commission was wedded from the beginning to a lone assassin, so they decided that it had to be the lone assassin, the single bullet theory. The one bullet went through both Kennedy and Connally and emerged virtually completely intact, even though it caused a great deal of damage and badly shattered two of the thickest bones in the human body. And I simply don't believe it. It's not just a matter of not believing it. The experts, as in my opinion, have adamantly proven this beyond a shadow of a doubt.
297-5633. We will go to the phone lines in just a moment with Dr. Michael Kurtz. Question from a listener, Howard in Gonzales. He wants to know about Connally's remarks when he was shouted, when he was shot. He shouted, "Oh no, oh no, no, my God, they are going to kill us all." Now, Connally was a World War II military veteran, and he was, of course, an avid hunter, and he immediately recognized that at least one high-powered rifle was involved here. Was that a thought at the moment? What do you think of Connally's remarks, Dr. Kurtz?
Well, I think his immediate thought there, the saying they're going to kill us all, I don't think that necessarily means that he was referring to a conspiracy at that point in time. I think what he said, you know, it's just an expression, you know, they're going to kill us all. I don't think Connally had even the time to process in his mind that whether there was one or more than one gunman firing shots. What's more important, I think, is what Connally stated later on in testimony before the Warren Commission and also in press conferences, that he was absolutely certain that the first shot struck President Kennedy and the second shot fired separately struck him. And we now have, since thanks to the Assassination Records Review Board, a tape-recorded conversation between Lyndon Johnson and John Connally, and both of them express in their conversation that neither one of them believed the single bullet theory, you know, which is a sine qua non of the single bullet of the lone assassin thesis. Without the single bullet theory, there's more than one assassin. And that in and of itself, I think what Conley himself said, adds to the tremendous doubt among most assassination researchers about the validity of the single bullet theory.
Now, the shot that killed President Kennedy, where do you think that one emanated from? Was it from the school book depository or somewhere behind the president, or was it from the so-called grassy knoll or place in front of the president and the motorcade?
Jim, I think it came from the grassy knoll area to the right front of where the president was at the time he was shot in the head. And you can clearly see on the Zapruder film the explosion on the right front side of Kennedy's head, right above the right ear. There's a tremendous explosion. I believe that the type of ammunition that was used was a dum-dum type bullet that explodes upon impact, and fragments of the bullet entered into his brain, killing him, but also driving him violently backward and leftward. It's not simply not possible for a bullet to come from behind, striking Kennedy in the head, and then driving him violently backward and leftward. It just doesn't happen that way in real life. Over the years, I've interviewed countless law enforcement officers, military veterans, and other people, hunters of all kinds, and not one has ever seen in real life the reaction of someone who's been shot the way Kennedy is supposed to have reacted, assuming that Oswald fired the fatal headshot from above and behind.
Moving in the opposite direction, not with...
That's right, yes.
Yeah. 2975633 HB in Denham Springs. We begin with you. You're on with Dr. Michael Kurtz. Hello, HB.
Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
Thank you.
Professor, given that the fact that it seems that our elected officials in all calibers, all the way to the President of the United States, seem to really enjoy exposure to the public as well as controversy on many different topics and items that come up before them in their various elected positions. Do you think that in our free society that it makes it almost impossible to protect these people given that fact? Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. That's a very good question. I think that's true. It's impossible for the Secret Service to provide adequate protection for any president. Back then, I well remember when President Kennedy came to New Orleans in 1962 to dedicate a wharf, the Nashville Avenue Wharf. They simply let people into the wharf area without any kind of electronic scanning devices. Nobody was frisked. I or anybody else in the crowd could have been holding a gun, you know, and at the risk of our own lives, of course, we could have tried to shoot the president. Easily. Politicians like to get out, shake hands with the crowd. One striking example of what you're referring to came in 1976, twice in the same month, in August of 1976, in the same state, California. President Gerald Ford was shaking hands outside the state capitol building in Sacramento, and interestingly enough, one of Charles Manson's girls, Lynette Squeaky Fromm, pointed a gun at Ford at close range. Fortunately, the Secret Service reacted and stopped her from shooting. But then just a couple of weeks later, Ford came back to San Francisco, and as he was leaving a hotel, a woman across the street from the hotel, Sarah Jane Moore, fired a shot at President Ford. And fortunately, some of the other spectators knocked her down and knocked the gun out of her hand so she couldn't fire any more shots. But even after that, 5 years later, President Ronald Reagan, of course, was shot because there were a bunch of people crowded around the entrance to the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C. It's impossible, you know, to provide the kind of protection that the Secret Service, I think, would like to provide.
SLU Professor Emeritus of History, and Dr. Michael Kurtz with us, 877-217-5757, if you'd like to join the conversation. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on with Michael Kurtz.
Good morning. Professor, do you think that J. Edgar Hoover's mafia contacts had anything to do with a conspiracy cover-up?
Well, I think it's quite possible. Your reference to J. Edgar Hoover's mafia contacts, I think, needs to be mentioned briefly that Hoover did, in fact, have contacts in the mafia. He liked to go to racetracks around the country that the mob operated, and he won very consistently, needless to say, at the fixed races. And Hoover was not at all enthusiastic about conducting any kind of a crackdown or investigation into organized crime anywhere in the country. But Bobby Kennedy made him do so. I think that it's possible now to say that there's a direct connection there. I don't want to go overboard and accuse J. Edgar Hoover himself of being involved in the assassination, but certainly the cover-up he was involved in. And I think part of the reason for the cover-up was the fact that he didn't want his known associations, I mean, what we know now, to come out at that time.
Now, a listener asks about the bullets found on Connally's hospital gurney and a couple of fragments found in the limousine of the president ballistically matched to the Italian Carcano bolt-action rifle that Lee Harvey Oswald had purchased under the name A. Heidel, which was found at the school book depository. Does this tie Oswald to the assassination?
Yes, of course it ties Oswald to the assassination, assuming, Jim, that these are legitimate pieces of evidence in the case. The problem with the bullet found on the hospital gurney at Parkland Hospital is there's no chain of evidence. We don't know which gurney it was found on. Warren Commission says it was Governor Connally's gurney, but the man who found it, Darrell Tomlinson, the hospital engineer, thought it was another gurney separate from Connally's, which would indicate it had been planted. And furthermore, there's no chain of evidence from the famous Warren Commission Exhibit 399, the famous single bullet, to trace it back all the way to the hospital gurney. The five people who handled that bullet, Darrell Tomlinson, the hospital's security chief, O.P. Wright, Secret Service agent, the head of the Secret Service, all, and the FBI ballistics person, all refused to identify Warren Commission Exhibit 399 as the bullet they handled on the night of the assassination. The bullet fragments found on the front seat of the limousine, again, you have to take the word of people. There are no photographs of these bullets in place. This is a fundamental piece of police procedure. You've seen this on CSI and countless other programs, and it was at that time. You photograph evidence in place before you remove it. We have no photographs of any bullet fragments in place in the limousine. And how do we know that those bullet fragments actually came from, were found on the front seat of Kennedy's limousine? We have to take the word of federal officials. And because of the enormous amount of lying and cover-up that took place in this case, I don't think that we can accept these pieces of evidence as legitimate evidence.
297-5633, 877-217-5757. Dr. Michael Kurtz of SLU. the author of Crime of the Century, will be back to talk more about the assassination of JFK 49 years ago today.
Thanks for joining us on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, your news, your culture. Listen live on your computer at WRKF.org.
Support for WRKF provided by our members and by All-Star Volvo of Baton Rouge. With Volvo factory service open at 7 a.m. Monday through Saturday. All-Star Volvo of Baton Rouge. Corsi at Cedar Crest. Announcing the opening of its all-new Volvo dealership. And by the Baton Rouge Area Foundation and its members. Together they launched the Water Institute of the Gulf and are now collaborating on Smiley Heights, a learning community with an auto training center and a career high school. More about memberships at BRAF.org. And by East Baton Rouge Parish Recycling, with a compost bin and rain barrel sale with mulch available. Saturday, December 1st, 9 to 2 at Memorial Stadium for East Baton Rouge Parish residents only. brgov.com/recycle.
This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Dr. Michael Kurtz with us for a while longer. A fantastic historian who has been at SLU for how long, Dr. Kurtz?
45 years now.
45 years. So you arrived 4 years after President Kennedy was killed and JFK was assassinated on this date in 1963. A couple of items that listeners have noted. What about Oswald killing the police officer, J.D. Tippit? Does that in any way indicate that he might have been culpable in the JFK assassination?
Yes, of course. It's quite possible. There's all kinds of questions about the Tippit killing that I don't think we have time to get into today, but generally speaking, Oswald killing the police officer certainly there's evidence against him. But you have to remember that the Tippit killing took place 4 miles from Dealey Plaza, and there are all kinds of questions about just how Oswald got from Dealey Plaza to the scene of the Tippit killing in time. And what exactly was the relationship between Tippit and Oswald and things of that kind? How come Tippit stopped Oswald since Oswald was walking and Tippit saw him from behind? He was walking on a sidewalk in a residential neighborhood where no crime had been committed. There are, you know, lots of questions about it, too.
Here's a question from Nicholas on Nicholson. He's asked, did the Warren Commission purposely give the conclusion? Could there have been a conspiracy involving the Warren Commission?
I think so. And let me say something in fairness to the Warren Commission. When Lyndon Johnson talked Earl Warren, who was very reluctant to chair the commission, into chairing it, he told Earl Warren that there's a good possibility that the United States could become involved in a nuclear war with the Soviet Union because Johnson himself believed that Cuba was behind the Kennedy assassination and that the American people needed to be satisfied that Oswald was the assassin. And he created the Warren Commission more in a sense to reassure people that Oswald did it by himself than to conduct a thorough, independent investigation into all the facts of the case and let the whole story of what happened come out. It was a cover-up. Members of the Warren Commission, we know that Gerald Ford, a member of the Warren Commission, secretly provided information to J. Edgar Hoover about what was going on inside the commission. We know that Alan Dulles, the former director of the CIA, who also was a member of the Warren Commission, refused to share with the commission all kinds of information regarding CIA mafia assassination plots against Castro and other dirty things that could have possibly led in a direction of a conspiracy rather than a lone assassin. And all kinds of questions were raised about the autopsy and medical evidence in the case that were never followed up. For example, we have a memorandum written on April the 30th, 1964, by junior counsel Arlen Specter, former U.S. senator who died very recently, stating that with all of the controversy about where the bullet wounds came from, we need to have an independent investigation of the medical evidence in this case. The official story is that there was no controversy at all, that the autopsy proved that all the shots came from behind. But here we have 5 months after the assassination, Arlen Specter saying that there is a great deal of controversy about where the shots came from. Things like that, you know, make it quite clear mm-hmm. that the Warren Commission did participate in the cover-up. But I think they did it in the national interest. They wanted to do so in order to prevent the United States from going, possibly, from going to war.
All right. Michael Kurtz with us for a few more moments. GK on Highland says, I want to clarify your statement, mine, that JFK was awarded the Navy and Marine Corps Medal, not the Silver Star, which I had stated, so I apologize for my error. And there is another school of thought that if there was a conspiracy, why hasn't somebody talked after all these years? Michael Kurtz, usually people end up spilling the beans on something like this.
Well, that's a good question, and I really don't know the answer to it. I can tell you what one of the key figures in the Garrison investigation, Dean Andrews, an attorney, said, that he found out what really happened, who was really behind the Kennedy assassination, and that if he ever said that whoever killed Kennedy could step on him like an ant, if they could kill the president and get away with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one possible motivation. Another is that, let's just say the mafia did it. The code of silence, or metto, would prevent anybody from admitting that. We've had all kinds of crazy kooks and nuts confess to killing Kennedy, of course, over the years, Jim, but obviously we're not talking about those kind of people.
No.
One of them, believe it or not, was the father of the famous movie actor Woody Harrelson.
Well, he was a dangerous man, and the other school of thought is that so many people who had loose ties, and maybe in some cases not so loose ties, to what happened on that day in Dallas, ended up dying violently and quickly after the assassination. Is there a coincidence here, or could there have been people who were killed for a reason?
Well, it's hard to say. I don't want to engage in too much speculation here, but it's very interesting that you brought that up. There have been a number of mysterious deaths in the case. David Ferry, a key figure in the Garrison investigation, was found dead in his apartment in New Orleans on the very day he was to be arrested. George DeMaurinshield, a right-wing former intelligence agent who was close to Lee Harvey Oswald, was found dead in his apartment when he was supposed to have testified before the House Select Committee on Assassinations. None other than Sam Giancana, the mafia boss of Chicago, was gunned down in his heavily guarded mansion in Chicago right before he was scheduled to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee regarding the CIA mafia plots against Castro. And there are numerous other people. The cab driver who drove Oswald supposedly to his rooming house the morning of the assassination died a mysterious death, and many other people. Probably the strangest was the fact that Jack Ruby developed a rather quickly developing case of cancer right after he won the right to have a new trial and promised that the whole truth would come out at the new trial. So I think there's a lot of, you can speculate a lot about all of this, but it's more than coincidental to me.
Another listener, Tracy at the Capitol, wants to know if you have read and put any stock in the book Dr. Mary's Monkey.
I've read it, but I don't place any stock in it. I just don't believe that Dr. Merrick Sherman was hired by the CIA to develop a type of poison to kill Castro, and I think that the, although there's no doubt that the CIA did try to kill Castro with poison, but Dr. Mary Sherman was an orthopedic, pediatric orthopedic surgeon. She was not an expert in the area of developing poisons, and I think there's a far too much speculation in that book.
2975633. We'll take a few calls. Please be brief. Jim and Walker. Jim, you're on the air with Dr. Michael Kurtz.
How you do, sir? My uncle, when he was young and in high school, was a Boy Scout and worked the LSU stadium, helping people get seated. And he had a gentleman that came in one time and sat down and ate a hot dog with him. And he sat down and said he was waiting for his daddy. And after a while, another gentleman came and they met, shook hands, and walked off. And Michael didn't think anything of it until after the assassination, and they put up pictures in the newspaper here in Baton Rouge. And lo and behold, he was like, well, Lee Harvey Oswald was the gentleman he had a hot dog with, and his daddy was Jack Ruby.
That's a wild one.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. I've never heard that before.
He was rather afraid. He talked to a couple people about it and was told, you know, you probably shouldn't say anything. Wasn't particularly safe. Be quiet.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, Dominic in Grand Coteau. Dominic, you're on with Michael Kurtz.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just moved back to Mississippi, and when I was in Mississippi, I got a big interest in the civil rights movement and James Meredith at Ole Miss, all the riots and all that stuff afterwards. And the hatred, I didn't know that the hatred of Kennedy was so strong. And now it's coming back again with Obama and the hatred people are having for him, you know, because of his race and politics, of course. But I'm wondering, do you think that another look at the assassination from the point of view of maybe the KKK or somebody else, you know, racial extremist right-wing involvement might be in order?
I think what's in order, we ought to have a full-scale, thorough, independent investigation into the whole assassination and all the possibilities, including, of course, right-wing racist, the Ku Klux Klan or whatever. The House Select Committee on Assassinations investigated the assassination of Martin Luther King, and they concluded it's quite possible that a group of racists, either in St. Louis or New Orleans, financed James Earl Ray during his journeys and his attempt to kill, his killing of Martin Luther King and his escape, and he almost got away, too, to London. And I think certainly that's one of the possibilities that we have to look into.
Well, we're 50 years away almost from the Kennedy assassination. Next year it'll be a half century. And appropriately, if there is something appropriate about this kind of thing, the 50th anniversary will be on a Friday, as the assassination was. Will there be a renewed interest in the JFK assassination as we approach November 22nd, 2013?
I think there will be. The city of Dallas is planning a week-long commemorative series of events in the Dealey Plaza area, and I know there are several books on the assassination that are going to be coming out. I heard that Tom Hanks is supposed to be producing a documentary on the assassination. supposed to come out that time, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of other publicity associated with it. And I might add, Jim, if you don't mind me getting a plug in, I'm going to have the third edition of Crime of the Century will be coming out next September.
Very good. Very good. Are there records, documents that have not been released that would be helpful?
I think that, yes, there are. We do know that there are some involving the CIA, and especially regarding Oswald's trip to Mexico City and his what exactly was he doing in Mexico City in the last week of September 1963? Who did he see at the Russian and Cuban embassies? What kind of anti-Castro Cubans was he involved with and things of that kind? The CIA has consistently refused to release all the documentation regarding that. There are probably other records that have been suppressed as well.
So what do you think will happen after all these years? Will we still be speculating 10 years from now, or will we know more?
I think we'll still be speculating. I don't have a great deal of confidence that we're going to wind up knowing the whole truth about what happened. I think just too much time has passed. We know that too many records have been destroyed forever. Too many people have died over the long period of time since the assassination. And it's possible that we may find out one or two other things, but I don't think we'll ever find out anything that conclusively proves exactly what happened in Dallas on that day.
Well, Dr. Kurtz, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and we look forward to doing so again soon, and congrats on your third edition of Crime of the Century coming out next year.
Thank you, Jim. I enjoyed it.
And thanks for spending Thanksgiving with us.
Sure.
Dr. Michael Kurtz, Southeastern Louisiana University, 45 years. With the film Lincoln out, there has been a renewed interest in the 16th American president. And of course, we know there are many similarities between Lincoln and Kennedy. Here are a few. Lincoln was elected to Congress in 1846. Kennedy, 1946, elected to the U.S. House. Lincoln elected president, 1860. John F. Kennedy, 1960. The names Lincoln and Kennedy each have seven letters. Both were concerned with civil rights. Both presidents' wives lost a child while living in the White House. Both presidents were shot while seated next to their wife. Both presidents were shot on a Friday. Both were shot in the head. Lincoln's personal secretary was named John Nicolay, advised him not to go to the theater. Kennedy's personal secretary was Evelyn Lincoln, advised him not to go to Dallas. Both were assassinated by Southerners. Both were succeeded by Southerners. Both successors were named Johnson. Andrew Johnson was born in 1808, Lyndon Johnson in 1908. Both assassins were known by three names. Both names comprised of 15 letters. Just a few comparisons between John Fitzgerald Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln. Thank you for joining us today. Have a great Thanksgiving and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.